A blessing can come in many forms. Formally, it can be a rite to encourage a good life or strength through a challenging episode. Informally, it can be a cashier wishing you well as she hands you your receipt. Pastor Clint Schneckloth is the lead pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville and the author of Mediating Faith, Faith Formation in a Transmedia Era. He recently discussed blessings with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums, who began by mentioning that blessings, graduations, weddings, groundbreakings seem to come with a transition in life.
We have this group of women that makes quilts for all the seniors that are graduating from high school.
Oh, wow.
And they spend the whole year making these quilts. And in some cases, what they'll do is they'll incorporate things from the kids' lives into the quilt, like a T-shirt that they had when they were younger, or one young woman who graduated from our church, her mom brought an old Easter dress that she had from when she was in elementary school, and they cut that apart and made it into the squares, you know. So then we give those quilts to them, and it's this, yeah, real powerful moment of kind of honoring them as they're transitioning from being a child to being an adult, mm-hmm. from living at home to going to school.
I'm wondering, and of course this would vary for every person who's receiving or every person who's offering a blessing, but I guess everyone sees a blessing as a different sort of thing, whether it's support, whether it's, I don't know, a call for protection, I don't know.
Well, our liturgical theorists, I think, would say that part of what people are doing there is there are certain things in our lives that we feel like we need some kind of liturgy for. Or a rite, you need a rite. And I really do think that transcends any one particular faith tradition and is kind of this almost kind of global, there are certain things in people's lives that almost seems like almost all cultures ritualize, whether that's like the transition to adulthood.
Like a bar mitzvah.
Right. Bar mitzvah, confirmation, marriage, death.
Sure.
Birth, you know, those kind of major points. And what's interesting is how maybe they've even been trained that liturgy is inappropriate, that you're supposed to be more spontaneous in your faith or whatever. Then suddenly these moments, they're like, is there a formal prayer for this? All of a sudden you're busting out a hymnal when you didn't even know that they were going to want one. You know, there's something about those moments that people want. And what I think is going on there is the tradition. Human beings over time having put together like a specific kind of language to use in those moments, that there's something about that that has power. All of a sudden you want to go to things that you've memorized or that have been carefully crafted. I can't remember exactly how she says this, but Anne Lamott has a line, I think, in one of her books where she talks about how Episcopalian liturgy is a series of words that human beings have figured out over time that they can say them and not be struck down by God, so they've stuck with them.
Right.
Like, oh, this worked and we didn't die, so we're going to keep saying these things because it works. You know, and I think that's part of what liturgy is. It's like, wow, okay, this worked with God and us, and so we're going to keep using it.
We're talking about transitions that are planned, graduations, marriages, things that people want to have happen. But then you have sometimes changes in life that you didn't see coming or didn't want to happen, and people will again look for guidance or look for help or look for strength from perhaps ritual, perhaps blessings. And I'm thinking about people whose homes and lives have been torn apart by storms or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then there's still a sort of different desire looking for help, right?
Yeah. I'm remembering, this is a while ago, but it was probably the most powerful ritual moment in U.S. history that I can think about in my own memory, but around September 11th, and how all these people kind of poured down there, and there were people from all different faith traditions, and they had those prayer services and memorial services, and you had people coming together from religious traditions who most of the time wouldn't even consider praying together necessarily, but the moment was so important that people were willing to risk even, you know, praying across faith lines or religious lines.
Is there ever something too trite for a blessing? Because, you know, I know that some religions have the blessing of the animals, which I think is a wonderful thing. But I guess some people might think, oh, gosh, I shouldn't ask for a blessing about this. That this seems too small to ask something that seems so important to others.
Yeah. I've wondered about that, too. You get asked in different contexts to pray over or bless things that'll surprise you. I can remember when I was doing my clinical pastoral education. This is when I lived in the Twin Cities. And you're in the hospital every day, and you're on a floor, and or you're on call, and you're getting called in to pray with people or bless people. And the two biggest surprises about things you could pray for or bless that had never occurred to me, you know, you think about people who are in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Typically, the reason why they aren't being released from the hospital yet after surgery is because they have to get their system running again. And that includes passing gas and things like that, right? And so I actually, for the first time when I was on CPE, prayed that people would fart.
But you know what? I get that because that's yeah.
Right? Which is a transition too, right? Like you want to get out of the hospital and the thing that's keeping you from getting out of that, right? And I remember the first time the person felt nervous asking for that as a prayer request. And then we were like, well, no, we should pray for this then because this is what you need right now. And so that was one example. Or before people would go in for surgery, like a blessing over a certain part of their body that was going to be operated on or whatever. And I guess maybe it only sounds trivial until it's the very thing that you need the most. And then it's no longer trivial at all.
I think about the responsibility then that you or any man or woman who leads a congregation or helps lead a congregation has when you're asked to do that. Because they're asking you to do something that's very important to them. And you get asked to do that a lot.
Yeah.
And you can't, not to be trite, but you can't phone it in. Or you shouldn't, right? I mean, because everyone's, like you said, when that is something that's important to that person, it's important to that person.
Yeah.
So that's got to be emotional. Not maybe emotionally, but that's a lot to ask.
I have some good friends who bought and they're refurbishing it's actually an old, I think, it used to be part of either maybe J.B. Hunt or maybe the Joneses. That the Joneses were trucking, industry up in Springdale, right? And there's this long shipping barn in downtown Springdale that they bought, and they're in the process of refurbishing it into a facility that different artists can rent out space, and they're doing different kinds of like woodwork or metalwork in there and that kind of thing. And they asked me to come up and bless this place as they're getting it up to code and doing what they need to do. And it was funny because, you know, when you go in and you plan something like that, on the one hand, you want it to be personal for them and to make sense and be meaningful for them. But then on the other hand, going back to what we were talking about before, there's something about using the ritual that's already in place, you know, taking blessings that people have used in other times and places and using that. And so in that case, what I did was I came up and I actually just brought my little occasional services book that I have as a pastor, and we just used this blessing for a building. And we used it as is. And there was some power about that. But then the place evokes the what's different about what you do. So we went around and a blessing – this is actually kind of fun. Blessings of a building, one of the things that you can do in our tradition is you're maybe encouraged to have some water and a branch. And then it's called asperges. It's like you're casting water from the tree branch around in the space. And so we got a bowl and tore off a little branch from a tree that was near this trucking building. And then we were going around the space and we're just like, you know, casting water onto dusty corners and shelves and all this kind of thing. But then in the middle of doing that, one of the guys who actually works in there happened to be there. So we're going around, and he's like, "What are you guys doing?" Right?
Yeah.
So we had an option there at that point. We either keep going and don't answer his question, keep trying to do the right, or we pause the right, talk with him for a while, invite him along or whatever. And so that's what we ended up doing. And it was this kind of funny mix of we're in the middle of the prayers and the blessing, and then all of a sudden we're in a conversation for 15 minutes. And then a worker comes in who's working on the roof. And then finally we get back around to it. But actually, that was a powerful part of it too. And then he came along for the rest of the casting of the water and the prayers and just kind of checked it out. The emotional power of the whole event was a mix of that, kind of the interruption and the local. I have the same thing happen when I take communion to people who are homebound. Sometimes either they can't hear well, or if they deal with memory loss issues, they may forget in the middle of doing the communion liturgy that you're even doing that. So they'll start talking to you again. And so you can either ram on through and force it, or you can answer their questions and have a conversation in the middle of what you think is a religious rite. And I don't know.
Well, finally, and we didn't talk about this, just occurred to me as we're having this conversation, but there can be sometimes a bit of controversy about the simple word blessed. Mm. You know, some people they don't want to be told to have a blessed day. Some people, and I just wonder, do you have any sort of opinion about the word? I mean, I who knew that this word would become controversial? But for some people, it has.
What are you allowed to bless?
Yeah,
is what's controversial?
Yeah, yeah. And what if I am of a different faith and I say to you, "Have a blessed day," or "You have my blessing"? Some people recoil from that. It's like, well, don't worry about me. I mean, I always see it like, hey, you're basically sending me good thoughts, whether we're across faiths or whatever. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering.
Well, you see people post that on Facebook now if they're trying to be sensitive to the variety of traditions of people that they're friends with on Facebook, is they'll say something like, hey, I'm asking for prayers or positive vibes
or whatever you do. Yeah.
Send them my way kind of thing. Yeah. That goes again to this whole thing of this transcends any, regardless of where you are, you still want the vibes or the thoughts.
That was Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums discussing blessings with Pastor Clint Schnickloth, the lead pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville and author of Mediating Faith, Faith Formation in a Transmedia Era.